Why Music, the Key to Memory, is available now on the BBC Radio 3 website.
This is Radio 3, it's 11 o'clock, and now we're here with some musical fireworks, Well Done 3 and Lopa Katari.
Thanks, Ian. Well, it is indeed 11 o'clock at night, and with only 1 hour left of today, for those of you who observe the Hindu calendar, may I wish you all a very happy new year. Village tracks from Kriest, the seven-strong Balkan folk band led by Croatian Mojmir Novaković. Mojmir's total and utter dedication to reviving and breathing new life into the ancient folk music of the area has earned him almost iconic status in his country. Village Tracks, also the title of the album, is out on Riverboat Records and definitely packs a punch. Hello and welcome to World on Three with me, Lopa Katari. Tonight, the programme really is the home of the Song Collector. Like the opening number, I have plenty of new tunes from across the globe, a rediscovered gem or two, and a session recorded last week with the legendary Shirley Collins, who played no small part in the English folk revival of the 60s and 70s. That's going to be on in about 20 minutes. But between now and then, I'm going to take you to a yodeling festival on a wee jaunt round countries from behind the old Iron Curtain. But right now, it's Rio Mira, a group inspired by the route of the Mira River, the shared heritage of Ecuador and Colombia. This is Adios Morena from their album Marimba del Pacifico.
Or your situation, whether you're a little man or a big man, I have ears to hear. Hear righteousness calling, come along the whole and we are one. No matter your religion or where you stand, whether you're a Christian or a politician, I have eyes to see. See, together we are chanting, come along the whole and we are one.
Well, from South American Collective and the Marimba to yodeling from Swiss a cappella group Nat Pure and Laut Jodel, an album representing some recordings from a festival of yodeling held in Munich in 2016. And finally, Jamaican reggae star with a career spanning almost 50 years, the one and only Clinton Fearon. And what I think is one of the best songs on his most recent release this morning, and it's called We Are One. Still to come, the one and only Shirley Collins in conversation with Catherine Tickell, recorded last week. But first, a trio of tracks from behind the old Iron Curtain, Russia, Czechoslovakia and Albania. And we start in Siberia and Vedant Kolod, a quartet made up of four singers ranging in age from 11 to 20. Tribes was their first album, released back in 2005, of ancient and medieval songs from the former Soviet Union. The band are now re-releasing all their albums as they make their first tentative steps onto the international stage.
Oh, Senki
At least wave your handkerchief at me, the joys and sorrows of Albanian song. That's the title of an album of deep South Albanian soul. Three heavyweights of world music came together to make this album. Producer Joe Boyd of Pink Floyd and 20 Diabate fame, Jerry Boys, engineer on Buena Vista Social Club to Orchestra Baobab, and last but not least, former Radio 3 colleague and ethnomusicologist Lucy Duran, who planted the seed in Joe's mind when he heard Albanian singer Idit Pula on Lucy's World Roots programme back in 2011. Sazaiso is the group that was formed for this project, and they're due over here for a 12-day tour starting in Cardiff on the 1st of November and ending at the Sage Gateshead on the 11th. The track in the middle before Sazaiso was from a Czech alternative rock band called DVA and Nunovo Tango, just one of a selection of interesting tunes celebrating the diverse Czech music scene. I'm Lapa Katari, and you're listening to World on 3 here on BBC Radio 3. The word legend or legendary is much used and not always applicable. But in the case of the session guest on the programme tonight, it's not only apt, but it seems too slight a word to truly describe her. Shirley Collins is indeed a legend, and to have the opportunity to spend time with her is something you don't pass on. She was here with producer Ian Kearney, who convinced Shirley to come out of retirement and record her first album in over 30 years. Shirley was doing the rounds to promote a documentary film on her life called The Ballad of Shirley Collins. So, whilst I was in Nairobi, Kenya, on a short break, I just got back this morning, Catherine Tickell met up with the Queen of English Folk, and this is what transpired. It starts with a song called All Things Are Quite Silent, where Shirley is accompanied by his sister Dolly on flute organ, recorded back in 1967.
All things are quite silent, each mortal at rest. When me and my true love lay snug in one nest, and a set
Things Are Quite Silent. That was Shirley and Dolly Collins from the album The Sweet Primroses. And that was recorded in 1967. Shirley Collins, what are your memories of that time and singing with your sister?
Well, this was the first time that Dolly and I had recorded together. Up to that time, I'd been playing with my own banjo accompaniments, my own five-string banjo and guitar, and with David Graham playing guitar as well. And it hadn't occurred to me for some reason to go to Dolly and say, will you write some arrangements, Dolly? Because she was a pianist and she was a composer. But she was sort of a bit of a recluse in those days as well. And finally, when I knew that I wanted something different, Dolly just, you know, came up trumps with beautiful arrangements. And we used to go along to rehearsals in London occasionally of the at the Early Music Centre. And it was there we first heard David Munro play, and it was there we first heard the portative pipe organ, which is, you know, a little flute organ. It was a copy of a 17th century from Bucharest. And we just fell in love with its, you know, beautiful fluting notes. And as soon as I heard it, I realised that this was probably the most perfect instrument for me to sing with.
And, it's you know, very evocative of, to me, of those albums of your song.
Yes.
So, your most recent album, Lodestar, it's a long time between 1967 and that, which was released in 2016, I think, wasn't it?
Yes.
What happened in between?
Oh, well, I lost my singing voice in between, down to sort of some ridiculous sort of heartbreak that I just, for some reason, went on for too long, and I just lost all my confidence, and I wasn't, you know, when I opened my mouth to sing, I didn't know what was going to come out. Sometimes nothing did. Sometimes it was croaks, and it was just humiliating. And I had two kids to bring up. I just had to find paid work to do. So that's what I did for the next 30-odd years,
yes,
30, 40 years.
Lodestar, I think it had been 38 years.
38, yes.
From the album before that.
I know. I mean, but in all those years, in between 38 years, I was still listening to mostly field recordings from the British Isles, because that's where I like to learn my songs, you know, from actual people who sang them before I did, not from books, ideally. You know, it's the way you get... Well, because I love the way that people sang. They sang straightforwardly. You know, there was no sort of dramatics in the song. The song told everything, and you just allowed the song to, you know, to channel the story. And I've always believed that that's the best way to do it. I know some people find it too plain and too unadorned, but I find adornment and passion in singing, you know, just embarrasses me. And you don't listen to the song, you sort of listen to the voice. Whereas with me, I'd hope you listen to the song.
Certainly when you sing, the words are always so, so clear. That's what it's about. As you say, it's like the song is coming through you.
Yeah.
So and you're very aware of those other voices, as you said, and other lives that are flowing into the in through that song as well.
And there are so many of them. I mean, generations and generations. For instance, on Lodestar, we have one song that goes back to the 16th century. And It's amazing. I mean, this is the whole mystery and the whole magic of traditional song as well, is what route it took, you know, down through, what, 400 years to get to this woman in Herefordshire who sang it. And nobody else had known it for centuries. It hadn't been collected anywhere. I mean, it might have still been sung in various places, but nobody had found it. And then suddenly there's this woman steps up and she sings this incredible song, you know, about... that was written following the earthquake in London in 15-whatever, you know, and part of old St Paul's Cathedral has toppled. And nobody knows about that either. And it was Thomas Delany, a religious zealot of the time, who wrote a song warning the people of England that God was really displeased with them and they better watch out. And the whole thing just fascinates me, that people still sang such songs, you know, without necessarily making a judgment on what happened in the story. They're just, you know, somebody sang it to them, they're singing it to the next person, and then I'm singing it to the next person as well. And I did watch a television programme a couple of, a week or so ago, and I can't remember the name of the chap who was doing it, but it was in Russia, and he spoke to one woman and asked her why she still wanted to sing these songs that came from, she said, they come from our ancestors, and he said, yes, but why do you still want to sing them? And she said, well, we're singing them back to the ancestors. And I thought, oh, it's made me have goosebumps, you know. I thought, what a wonderful reply, that you are still aware of your ancestors. And I know that I am still aware of all those people behind me that sang the songs. You know, they sort of behind my shoulder, yeah. And that's how I want it. You know.
Well, I love the darkness in those songs, and the fact that, you know, sometimes you're just hearing that single voice telling this story, which is so sinister. Mm-hmm. And so dark. And on that album, I must say that Ian Curie's production of it really, for me, brought that out. And your voice, which is not the same voice as, no. You know, as you had in 1967.
No.
But there's something deeply commanding and just wonderful about that. Ian, how did you approach putting that soundscape around Shirley's voice?
The thing that was always in my mind from the start, because I've known Shirley for as long as she hasn't sung, and a bit beyond that as well, and we've been friends. And so when we thought of doing some recordings in a very sort of will this work, will this not work kind of way, my own brief to myself was to tell the stories, and Shirley's voice has got to be the paramount thing. Everything else is frames. It's frames. We used wonderful musicians, and all the way through, I was trying to tell people, play less,
yes.
Play less, play less, because the stories and the voice are what counts. And that is what, to me, has always attracted me about traditional music and traditional song.
Now, Ian, you're not just here as Shirley's producer. You're here as Shirley's accompanist. You have to tell us about the instrument. And also, I think you're going to be doing the song Cruel Lincoln, which, Shirley, this one does have a lot of blood in it, you have to admit.
There is plenty of blood in it, but it's justified in a way, because Lincoln is a mason who's built a castle for a local lord and he hasn't been paid and he's out for revenge.
I see.
But, you know, we all know that England was never totally merry England, was it? Mm. You know, it's always been, it's got a dark history.
Absolutely.
And this one has been collected throughout the country, but quite rarely. And this one comes from a gamekeeper from Popham in Hampshire, who's saying, you know, Cruel Lincoln, quite blithely. You know, it was a song to him. He was just telling a story. And the story was just there. And he wasn't worried about the blood or the, you know, the violence. Mm. He just sang it because that's what it was.
And tell us about the instrument.
The instrument.
The instrument.
It is called the instrument because it doesn't actually have a name. Shirley had it made back in 1967 because she found that playing the five-string banjo was sometimes a bit loud for her voice, so she wanted something a bit softer. So she had taken for her a Victorian English five-string banjo neck, which was then grafted onto a hand-built body by the guitar maker John Bailey, which is in the shape of a bottom half of an Appalachian dulcimer. And normally, John Bailey, when he made an instrument, he would write, this guitar was made for so-and-so by, or this mandolin. In this case, it says, this instrument was made for Shirley Collins. He didn't know, so we call it the instrument.
And well, we didn't know, did we, whether to call it a banjimo or a dulcimer, you know, and so this instrument is far more dignified.
Yeah. And it's quite unique in that you can play it like a banjo, in a way, as I do on Cruel Lincoln, which is like playing very slow, plucked banjo, but it's resonant. There's no percussive, it's all resonance, as I hope you'll hear. But you can also play it like a dulcimer by strumming it, so it's incredibly versatile.
Said the Lord to his lady, I'm now going out. Be aware of Cruel Lincoln, who lives by the gate. What care I for Lincoln or any of his kin? My doors are all bolted and the windows are pinned. As soon as her lord had got out of sight, Cruel Lincoln crept in the middle of the night. Got and pinched my sweet baby, which caused it to cry, while the nurse sat a singing, oh, hush a lullaby. Oh, nurse, cried the lady, how sound you do sleep, whilst my little baby most bitterly do weep. Oh, lady, dear lady, come and take it on your lap, For I cannot quiet it with miracle, with pep. The lady came down, not thinking any harm. Cruel Lincoln stood awaiting for to catch her in his arms. Oh, Lincoln, cruel Lincoln, spare me life for 1 hour, and you shall have my daughter Betsy, who is my heart's flower. Go and fetch your daughter Betsy, she will do very well to hold up the silver basin for to catch her mother's blood. There was blood in the kitchen, there was blood in the hall, there was blood in the parlour where the lady did fall. As soon as her lord had heard what was done, bitter tears from his eyes so freely did flow, saying the nurse shall be burned in the fire close by, cruel Lincoln shall be hanged on the gallows so high.
Shirley Collins, now 82, sharing her stories, songs and life with the lovely Catherine Tickell. The second part of that session still to come, but if you missed any of that or simply want to hear it again and again and again, you can. From Monday for the next 30 days, the session with Shirley will be available to download as a podcast for free for your listening pleasure for all time. And you can listen again to the whole of the programme also for the next 30 days. Full details of tonight's playlist is also there on the World on 3 homepage on the BBC Radio 3 website. I'm Lopa Kotari. They're also coming up on the programme, music from Piers Faccini, Trio de Cali and Lau. But right now, a couple of tunes from the Americas. As I'm sure many of you know, music and food is a match made in heaven. Well, Peruvian Martin Morales, ex-iTunes Europe and now restaurateur, has a record label called Tiger's Milk, on which he releases some of the great music he has discovered on his travels across the Andes in search of equally great food. La Peruanita is one of the artists Martin came across, and I'm going to play Recuerda Corazón from her. That's on the album Andina, released today. But first, here's Nidia Góngora, Colombian folk root singer, a regular on Will Quantic Holland's Music Explorations. María lleva al cielo.
Llévame María, cuando
I just love that. An ode to the Andes from Lima-based singer La Peruanita and Recuerda Corazón, a flavour of 1970s Hueno, a popular dance groove of the Andes. Anglo-Italian Piers Faccini, who many of you may know through his work with longtime friends Balaké Sissoko and Vincent Segal, I Dreamed an Island is Piers' solo album, and in his own words, it's a celebration of multiculturalism from a historical Mediterranean perspective. The album has an otherworldly, almost dreamlike sound to it, and this track, Bring Down the Wall, has a soft Steely Dan feel to it.
Bring down the wall, break it, stone by stone. Bring down the wall, shake it to the bone. Tear down the rock, take it, go, go, go. Tear down the rock, make it, tear, go. Throw down your arms, believers, hellfire burn. Throw down your arms, believers, turn by turn. Put down the book, burn it, page by page. Put down the book, let the fire rage. Bring down the wall, break it, run across. Bring down the wall, shake it, must come down. I'll keep the flame burning, burning bright. I'll keep the flame burning, oh, shine your light.
casa la casa toi e se vorrei ni cu i castani su castana vena tra voce voli ma coi ci ue cangi la vita to nu restare bloccato a ciai tira il tu per naviga ninde shamo de paru
Thank you.
gentle, swinging Somalia and Men Are Cruel and Kind, another of the tracks from one of my top 10 albums of the moment. Sweet as Broken Dates, Lost Somali Tapes from the Horn of Africa. That was Amina Kamari. All I know is that it's one of the recordings buried deep underground to keep it from being destroyed during the civil war that broke out in Somalia in 1988. If you have any information on Amina, I'd love to know. Is she still alive? What's she up to? Is she still singing? Have you got any of her records? Get in touch via the Twitter at BBC Radio 3. The hashtag is WorldOn3. Now, I've got a couple more tunes for you before we rejoin English folk's grand dame Shirley Collins in a session that she recorded for World on Three last week. I saw this next band in the Claw Ballroom in the South Bank Centre over a year ago. I was heading off to get a cuppa when they started to play. It made me stop in my tracks. Needless to say, I never did get round to getting that cup of tea. This is Sundown, featuring guest singer Sabia, from their album Shadow Lines. Simple and beautiful.
She walked barefoot to the sun, let the heat pour into her lungs. Her echo kissed the wind. She asked the sun to give her wings. Lift me up, can you hear me, can you hear me? I want to feel the birds at my side. Tell the sky I'll be the blue, I'll be the blue. For the eyes of the child I once was. She dreams in sunlight as she dreams in days. She dreams in sunlight as she drifts away. Free to grow. She'll watch the earth move as she meets the sky. She'll watch the earth move and dream in sunlight. Free to grow. She dreams in days. She dreams in sunlight as she dreams in days. She dreams in sunlight as she dreams in days. She dreams in sunlight as she dreams.
Thank you.
Caba me violin, the lament of the violin, another track there from Sazaizo, South Albanian blues. Pure improvisation around a mood, the violin and clarinet in soulful conversation. Although it's not made absolutely clear, I think that the name of the group is a combination of the region of Saz, where the music comes from, and iso, from isopolyphony, the kind of music typical of that region. Well, let's get back to Shirley Collins and the session we recorded last week when she met up with Catherine Tickell. In the first part, she talked about the English folk music that really caught her attention and got her thinking about how to capture its spirit. In the second part we're about to hear, Shirley speaks about her time in America and working with Alan Lomax, an avid song collector like herself. The session begins with her recording of Proud Masary from her album Folk Roots, New Roots, released in 1964, with Davy Graham on guitar.
Proud Masary stands in the bardoor, as slim as a willow. In his hand,
Song Proud Masry, and that's from the album Folk Roots New Roots by Shirley Collins and Davy Graham, a really incredibly influential album. And Shirley, I'm quite interested to know, when you started making that album, what made you want to work with Davy, apart from the fact that he was just a guitar hero?
Well, at that time I was married to Austin John Marshall, who put together the suggestion that Dolly and I work together, for instance. But with Davy, John was a great jazz fan, and he used to go out to jazz clubs, which, you know, just left me cold. I dislike jazz more than anything in the world, almost. But he came home one night and said, "Look, I've just heard this remarkable young guitarist. Would you mind if I brought him out one day and we could talk, because I think you could work with him?" And I thought, well, not likely, not if he's a jazz musician, you know. But Davy came out to the house in Blackheath and sat down and played She Moved Through the Fair, the Irish song that I had heard magnificently sung by Margaret Barry, the Irish tinker. And the way he played it was so extraordinary. He put Indian sounds in it, and Indian harmonies and North African ones, and yet it was still completely Irish, you know. It was just absolutely amazing, and I sang it with him, and to sort of be enveloped by Davy's playing was quite extraordinary, you know, the energy you could take from that as well, and the beauty of his musicianship, you know. He was just absolutely extraordinary. There really hasn't been anybody like him since, and, you know, he could take a song and shake it but keep it its absolute core.
Yes.
And he didn't ruin anything, as far as I'm concerned. Although, of course, there were some people after they'd heard the album who really didn't like it at all.
But you've never been, it seems to me, never been worried about trying things that were perhaps not the done thing, because you worked with Davy, but also you worked with early music musicians.
Yes.
And these things at that time were not the way that one sung a folk song, I don't think.
No, absolutely not. I love your accent, Ned. No, I mean, if
that's
you were...
me being establishment. That's my best shot at being establishment.
No, I mean, a lot of folk songs we had been used to. I mean, when I was a kid, listening to Country Magazine and As I Roved Out on BBC, and they used some folk songs. Some of them were sung in the studio by a trained singer with a piano, and then they started to introduce unaccompanied songs that the people who were doing field recordings for the BBC were bringing back. So there was this thing that you could either be parlour singing,
yes,
you know, and very twee and rather dainty, or you could sing like the people themselves actually sang. And so I always had, because I've got this working class background, which has always stood me in such good stead, I felt part of them. I didn't have to sort of invent myself at all, and I've always sung as I've always sung and always spoken. And there was Davy sort of somehow bringing this extra vitality into it, but without me having to change the way I sang. And Davy just really transformed a lot of the songs.
And you mentioned field recordings, and in 1959, well, tell us about what happened in 1959.
Yes, in 1959 I was in America for 3 months of it, I was in the Deep South recording folk songs and blues and work songs, and with Alan Lomax, the American folklorist. And, I mean, that was just an extraordinary experience to go from post-war England to America. I mean, partly in rather silly things in a way, like, I mean, there was still some food rationing in England, you know, right up to the late 50s. But when I got to America, it was the land of plenty, you know. There were 27 flavours of Howard Johnson ice cream, for a start. And I thought, gosh, this is absolutely wonderful. And I had my first pizza there, you know. And going into the South as well, you sort of, you know, we came across people, absolutely wonderful singers, both in black and white communities. And we ranged over from sort of the Carolinas through Kentucky, Tennessee, Virginia, Arkansas, Alabama, and, you know, most amazingly, Mississippi, where we ended up at the Mississippi State Penitentiary for 5 days, recording work songs and blues. That was an extraordinary experience. You know, Mississippi State Penitentiary, Parchman Farm, is that. I thought it was going to be a great grey fortress, but it wasn't. It was a plantation with 2,000 prisoners, you know, working the land, making a great deal of profit for the state of Mississippi.
And did you know in advance who you were going to be looking for, or did you find them as you were, by word of mouth as you were?
Alan had he'd recorded in northern Mississippi, away from the Delta, sort of up in the hills. He had recorded in the 40s Miles Pratcher and Bob Pratcher, old musicians who still played music from the Civil War, you know, dances and songs from that time. And so he wanted to go back to see them as well, to see what change had happened there with them. And we recorded up there for a couple of days, recorded Lonnie and Ed Young, who were incredibly African. And there was the most remarkable night for me was the night that Lonnie did a snake dance, a serpent dance. And there was a fiddle and there was just drumming and a whistle and a very primitive sound. And Ed just coiled himself down into the ground dancing until he was right on the ground, and he hit the ground, and the women dancing around him wiped their hands over the dust and put them across his forehead. It was such an extraordinary sight. And then he unwound again and came up, and I remember Alan looking at me, you know, what have we seen here? This is remarkable. And Alan later wrote that it was like Pan, watching Pan dance, you know, and it was
incredible.
Then after we'd heard them, they suggested that we go and listen to a blues singer, a neighbour of theirs called Fred McDowell, who was a cotton farmer. And at the time I thought, no, I don't want to go and hear anybody else now. I just want to stay with this really primitive sound that I'm never going to hear the like of again in my life. But the next day we went to the clearing where all the shacks were, and waited for Fred to come, because he'd been picking cotton all day. And in the evening, this very slight figure appeared out of the trees and into the clearing. And it was such an extraordinary sight. There were kids running around, you know, playing. There were chickens scratching. There were dogs barking. And Fred came forward in his work dungarees and sat down on the step and started to play. And I'd never heard anything like it. It was magical, and it was magnetic, the shimmering sound of his slide guitar, and then the strength of his singing and the beauty of it, and the blues themselves that he had were just incredible. I didn't resent him anymore after that, of course. You know, it was just about the best experience I'd had in that entire trip, and that's, you know, counting some other really incredible times as well.
Lord, that's 61 highway, deep and long in the road I know. Say that's 61 highway, deep and long in the road I know. Session of a New York City, down in Gulf of Mexico. Where did some folks send you? We home, but we don't run.
But to bring Fred, you know, the possibility that he could now perhaps, you know, stop being a cotton farmer all his life and go out and play blues for other people. And, of course, that's what happened. I mean, he came to England to play. The Rolling Stones took him up, bought him a silver lamé suit that he's supposed to be buried in, you know. So he became a real hero to people and is just, I think, one of the greatest blues musicians of all time.
If you see my baby, tell her she's all right with me. I said, that's all right, baby, you're gonna need my helping hand. I said, that's all right, baby, you're gonna need my helping hand. There'll be some deep in my mind.
Mississippi Fred McDowell with 61 Highway, and that was recorded back in 1959. Shirley Collins, tell us about that recording. You were involved in making that particular recording.
Well, I was there for every bit of recording that happened during that trip. And, I mean, they say it's quite physical work as well, because the tape recorder was huge, the batteries, we had four great batteries we had to cart around with us. There was no portable stuff at all, you know, you were just lugging stuff around. I was taking notes, I was issuing contracts, I was there and doing lots of work. But I did actually record one whole session myself where I actually had control of the tape machine, and this was in the hills of Arkansas, the mountains of Arkansas, where we met in a place called Timbo, a married couple, Oscar and Ollie Gilbert. And Alan was at one point, this was a place where the pioneering spirit still existed, you know, and Alan and Oscar were in one room drinking Oscar's moonshine. And Alan had said to me, take the machine and go and see if you can get some songs from Ollie. Well, we just sat all afternoon recording songs. I was singing songs to her that I knew, and she was absolutely wonderful. She's a really feisty woman and wonderful singer with some great songs. In fact, we're going to sing one of hers tonight.
Tell us a bit about this one.
Well, this is a delightful song called Pretty Polly. Again, like so many of the American mountain songs, it started life in England and it was taken over with the settlers or the indentured servants. And some people were actually transported to America, and that's all happened before transportation happened in Australia. You know, it was earlier. So lots of the songs were quite old already when they got there. And in England, we call it Pretty Polly, a song of a girl who follows her sweetheart toward dressing up as a man so she can sort of keep her eye on him. But Ollie had changed it to happening in the American War of Independence. And she has this wonderful line. When she sang United States, she said New United States. And then there's one line in the song that has far more words than you can fit into the tune, where she sings, I'm a New United States soldier from George Washington, I came. And you sort of have to try and get it in there. But no, it was one of the best experiences as well, just being and talking with Ollie Gilbert. Yonder valley, Pretty Polly did dwell, and she was courted by a captain who loved her so well. But when her cruel parents came this for to know, they parted Pretty Polly and her own true love. One night she lay musing on her bed, and a sudden strange fancy come to Polly's head. No father, no mother shall make me false prove. I enlist for a soldier and follow my love. Then coat and breeches she put on, and in every degree she looked like a man. She went to the stable, six horses she found, and saddled a mare could travel the ground. And with a brace of pistols swung by her side, like a United States soldier, Pretty Polly did ride. She rode till she come to the town, and there she drew up at the sign of the Crown. Now the first and she met with was an English old lord, and the next and was Captain Pretty Polly's true love. What news from the country, what news do I hear? She handed him a letter from Polly, oh dear. He opened the letter, two pages he found, saying Polly is a soldier with the men all around. Now Polly, being weary, she hung down her head, and she called for a candle to light her to bed. The captain, he said, I've a bed at my ease, and you may lie with me, kind sir, if you please. Well, to lie with a captain is to lie with a king. I'm a United States soldier from George Washington I came. I'll fight for my liberty by sea and by land. If you'll be my captain, I'll be your command. Now Polly is married, she lives at her ease. She goes out when she's ready, returns when she please. She left her old parents to weep and to mourn, saying, Polly, oh Polly, when will you return?
Oh, the absolutely delightful, the one and only Shirley Collins in session for World on 3. If you missed any of it or want to hear this wonderful lady again, go to the podcast section of the Radio 3 website where you can download it for free from Monday. These next two tunes are from albums that are also currently riding high in my top 10. Trio de Cali with Kronos Quartet and Eyaye from Ladi Lakan, followed by Rejected Due to My Circumstance, another wonder of Somalia unearthed after years of burial deep within the country's soil, sheltered from harm and preserved for us all to enjoy and rediscover.
Dunta dunya banna china mana. Thank you.
Mukhtar Idi Ramadan, another song of sorrow from Sweetest Broken Dates, lost Somali tapes from the Horn of Africa. Martin Hayes, ring a bell with any of you? Irish fiddler extraordinaire, part of the Gloaming? Well, in Martin's first solo project since the Gloaming, he's put a quartet together. This music is all about the moment, letting the melody speak, unencumbered and free to flow. As Martin puts it, the body holds the rhythm and the heart generates the feeling in response to the beauty of the melodic line. So please take a moment and let yourself float in the joy of the melody.
I make do for shelter. I see my breath most nights. I broke my ties with the folk at home. I weighed my heart with an anchor made of stone. And it came to pass, I find myself here with you.
A bit of Lau, who are celebrating their 10th anniversary this year. Throwing Pennies is from their 2012 album Race the Loser that saw them team up with Tucker Martin, a US producer for REM and others. The album won them 5 stars and much critical acclaim. It's just one of the tracks the guys have put in their best of album ahead of a 21-gig UK tour starting on the 16th of November at the Wyeside Arts Centre in Wales and ends on the 9th of December in Lerwick up in Shetland. Well, let's pick up the pace a bit with some South African jazz from the Malumbo Jazzmen, a group from the 60s formed by drummer, composer and ANC activist Julian Bahula, who, like many others in the 60s, was forced to leave South Africa for his political views. Spirit of Malombo is a two-CD box set that was released in 2014 and chronicles Julian's work over two decades, with recordings from both South Africa and his time in Europe. An interesting bit of info, Julian and his wife, Lisa, started London's first regular club night to promote African music, and it all happened at the 100 Club in London. This is Abby's Mood.
Hey!
Fiesta de Negritos, recorded in Medellin, Colombia, with cumbia group Puerto Candelaria, one of many blinding tracks on Fanfar Chocalia's album Onwards to Mars. It's been out a while, so if you haven't got around to getting a copy yet, it could be a good Christmas prezi for yourself. And that World on Three, listeners, is it for tonight from me, Lopa Kotari. Remember, you can download a podcast of tonight's session with Shirley Collins from Monday. Next week, I'll be back with some of our findings from this year's World Music Expo, WOMEX. Who knows what our microphones will hone in on, but it always promises to be a fabulous adventure. I leave you with Sibu Sile Shaba and his particular style of freeform South African jazz. This is Nomafufo from Open Letter to Adonaiya. Till we meet again, good night.
Hello and welcome from me, Katrina Young. I'm here through the night with a bit of a rarity to start with, the world premiere recording of a complete ballet score by the late 19th century French composer Cécile Chaminade. She published around 400 works, many of them salon pieces, but there was a handful of more ambitious projects, including a symphonic ballet, Caliroé, based on Greek mythology. Caliroé is betrothed against her will to Alcmaeon. At the start of the ballet, she is sitting in his garden, mourning her loss of freedom. Alcmaeon sends slaves to dance for her, but although she joins in, her dance is one of sorrow. Then comes a thunderstorm, and Alcmaeon prepares an offering to Venus in the hope that she might plead his cause. As the sun rises over the sea, Venus emerges from the waves, but she too is rejected by Caliroé, and in revenge, Venus turns her into a statue. Alcmaeon is distraught and falls at the statue's feet, but then it begins to move. His love has brought Caliroé back to life. She forgets her past and embraces Alcmaeon. The two of them then go to worship the goddess that united them. Martin Yates conducts the BBC Concert Orchestra in the ballet Caliroé by Cécile Chaminade, which begins among the oleanders, olives and pine trees of Alcmaeon's garden.